While the large majority of Americans have never heard of cryptocurrency, it is the medium of exchange of the future that has already begun. On the other hand, the large majority of RBN listeners are very aware of the corruption within the Fed and the trillions in counterfeit money and credit it has created. Well, would you like to do something about this? OneCoin, the fastest growing company of any kind in world history, will pay you to help do away with the Federal Reserve. Henry Ford didn't invent the automobile, but he surely developed many great improvements in the industry. In 1927, talking pictures made silent movies obsolete overnight, and email has practically done away with the need for a fax machine. With cryptocurrency, Bitcoin became the pioneer in 2009. But now OneCoin, as the first ever gold-backed cryptocurrency, has moved to the top of the industry in only 2 years, and its impact on the financial world could be devastating to the Fed. Bill Gates and Richard Branson and all the jillionaires are already acknowledging that this system of paying for goods and services is becoming what will be recognized as the new worldwide reserve currency. For more information, call Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911. Again, that's Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
I saw you there. Just standing there, and I thought I was only dreaming, yeah. I kissed you then, and then once again.
Daniels, and welcome to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the RBN Network. Today is Sunday, September 25th, and it is 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And today's topic is infection linked to large increased risk for death by suicide. Now, not just any infection, no sirree, Bob, a very particular type. And tonight, we're going to find the hidden link. And it's only infections treated in the hospitals. What could possibly be the cause? So, as always, we're going to reference research done by the medical industrial complex itself. That's right. Why should I do research when they've already done it? Besides, they've checked it out to make sure that it's, well, valid, truthful, reliable. So we're going to take a look at that. And, of course, your doctor has gotten this information in his inbox because this is from Medscape, Medscape Family Medicine, as a matter of fact. And they say, infection linked to large increased risk for death by suicide. Now, just to let you know, if a drug causes a certain effect to change by even 12%, that drug is deemed by the FDA to be effective in causing that effect. So in other words, if a drug causes, say, a 20% increase in survival, then that drug is deemed to be causing a 20% increase in survival. And so what we have here is a maneuver. This maneuver is people being hospitalized for infections, and is causing, get this, a 43% increased risk of dying by suicide after discharge. Now, it's pretty impressive, pretty impressive. So let's see what the research says. Then we're going to take a look at some specialized information that we have. And then we're going to draw some conclusions about what might be going on here. Okay. So this is dated August 10th, 2016. So infection requiring hospitalization has been linked to a 43% increased risk of dying by suicide. Now, this is infection requiring hospitalization. So if the infection does not require hospitalization, or if the person does not receive hospitalization for the infection, then there is no such increased risk. And this is important to note, because often when whether or not a person is admitted to a hospital for an infection is usually discretionary. Yeah. The finding raises questions about the role of biological mechanisms of infection, particularly neuroinflammation, on suicidal behaviors. The English translation is, this finding raises questions about the relationship between infection and suicide, particularly as it affects the brain or the nervous system. So our findings indicate that infections may have a relevant role in the pathophysiological, that's a big word for disease, mechanisms, that means how things happen, of suicidal behavior. The investigators, with first author so-and-so in Denmark, write, to our knowledge, this investigation is the largest study to date to examine infections as a predictor of death by suicide, they report. So research also notes that although psychiatric disorders and previous suicide attempts might constitute stronger predictors of suicide, they found that hospitalization with infection accounted for a population attributable risk of 10%. In other words, 10% of all suicides in the population studied, or in the population in general, were as a result of people who were treated for infection in hospitals. And so the implication is that 1 in 10 suicides could be prevented if infections were to be eliminated entirely, provided the association was causal, they write. Now, remember, this is infection treated in the hospital, which is an and, so, right? So we could either eliminate the infection or we could eliminate the hospital treatment. Okay. Let's see what these researchers figure out, because they're, you know, they've got more experience than we do. Who knows? Maybe they're a lot brighter. We'll see what they figure out. And this study was published in the August 10th Journal of the Journal of the American Medical Association Psychiatry, just by the way. So focus on biological predictors. Now, it has always, by the way, been the goal of the medical industrial complex to be able to predict suicide, to predict who is going to commit suicide. So, of course, we could intervene and treat them with presumably effective therapy. So to estimate the association between hospitalization with infection and the risk of death by suicide, the investigators used Danish nationwide registers, which included a total of 7.2 million Danish citizens aged 15 years or older living in Denmark between July 1980 and December 2011. Now, this is 31 years. That's the 31-year period, 7.2 million people. This is what we call big data. That means a lot of data covering most of the population. So the overall rate of hospitalization with infection in the study population was 11.2%, and the rate of infection among individuals who died by suicide was 24%. Okay. After adjusting for factors that included sex, age, calendar period, marital status, cohabitation status, how rich or how poor they were, and scores on the comorbidity index, that means other associated diseases, the incidence ratio of suicide was still 42% greater among those with infection compared to those without. Now, this is important. So what they're saying is, no matter what a person's income level was, low, medium, or high, no matter who they live with, a boyfriend, a spouse, girlfriend, parents, lived alone, didn't matter. Time of year, seasonality, summer, winter, age, sex, didn't matter. Their rate of suicide was increased by 42% if they had been treated in a hospital for an infection. In addition, the risk was increased in a dose-dependent manner, with the highest incidence of suicide almost threefold among those with seven or more infections. So among those with just one infection, the risk of suicide was still increased by 34% compared to those with no infections. Now, when you say no infections, and we know infections treated in the hospital. So the duration of hospitalization for infection treatment was also associated with suicide risk, ranging from a relative risk of more than twofold after 94 days of hospitalization to only 46% increase for 1 to 4 days of hospitalization. So the amount of time since hospitalization was also important, with the strongest effect 1 in 2 years after hospitalization compared to those without infection. So how many days was spent in the hospital was a very important predictor. Again, whether a person stays in a hospital 4 days or 10 days for an infection is usually a matter of discretion with the treating physician. It can affect a lot of things. And whether a person stays 1 day or is not admitted at all is, again, there's discretion there as well. So when a doctor admits a patient to the hospital for an infection for even 24 hours, he increases that person's chance of suicide by 38%. So this is amazing. So the increased risk included most types of infection, with the exception of otitis media, that's ear infection, and pregnancy-related infections. So the highest suicide risk was associated with hepatitis and AIDS, both a little over doubling the suicide rate. I'm finding this consistent with previous research showing higher rates of suicidal behavior in those populations. So risk was also notably high in association with infections of the respiratory tract. Let's call it pneumonia. That's going to become important later on. So if you have a pneumonia and you're treated in the hospital, your chances of committing suicide in the 2 years after discharge is 54% higher. And sepsis, sepsis, just by the way, is a much more serious infection than pneumonia, which is respiratory tract, and has a much higher death rate. However, it has a lower suicide rate, so it's only 51% higher, whereas for pneumonia, it's 54% higher. And actually, we're going to see in a little bit why that might be the case. And so bacterial infections were associated with only a slightly higher risk for suicide compared to viral infections, which is 37% and 26%. So in other words, the difference between viral and bacterial wasn't that great, a finding that likely rules out antibiotic treatment and its effect on the microbiome in influencing the risk, the authors note. Now, I just want to say, because I might forget to come back to it, is when a person is admitted to a hospital, especially for a respiratory infection, it takes several days for the cultures to come back to indicate whether it's a viral or a bacterial infection. And often, antibiotics are started presumptively. In other words, they're started before the cultures come back. So a person literally receives at least a day, if not 3 days, worth of antibiotics before it's determined that the infection might be viral and antibiotics might not actually be beneficial. And therefore, of course, they would be stopped. And so, in other words, the antibiotic treatment is still a factor even in viral infections because they presumptively receive at least 3 days of antibiotic therapy. Okay, surprising finding. Notably, the increased suicide risk associated with infection was still 31% higher even among individuals with no history of a psychiatric diagnosis, including those with no history of schizophrenia or affective disorder and no history of substance use. We'll call it abuse, what they're talking about. So in other words, if a person had no history of schizophrenia or affective disorder, their risk of suicide was 40% higher after this hospitalization. And if they had no history of drug abuse, their relative risk of suicide was still 35% higher than had they not been hospitalized. And so this was a very surprising finding The Dr. Lund, the investigator, told Medscape News. Now, you look at this. This is really shocking because people with psychiatric diagnoses, with psychiatric diagnosis, were actually not any more likely to commit suicide than someone who never had any psychiatric history at all. Of course, this calls into question the whole profession of psychiatry in terms of their ability to determine who is diseased and who might do something outrageous like take their own life, assuming it's psychiatrically related, you know, mental disorder, right? And who will not. And so this is something, and I can tell you way back, I went to medical school in 1979 to 83. Back then, psychiatrists had zero ability to predict who would commit suicide and who wouldn't. They would do all kinds of questionnaires and exams and whatever, and blood levels and blood tests, and put people on medication, and still they could not predict who would or who would not commit suicide. In fact, their prediction had absolutely no relationship to who actually did commit suicide. And this, by the way, is still the case. So after accounting for individuals diagnosed with any psychiatric disorder, we still found a significant increased risk of dying by suicide after infections, implying that psychiatric disorders may only partly explain the association. Wait, stop right now. If the increased risk of dying by suicide is the same between those who have psychiatric disorders and those who don't, then psychiatric disorders not only partly explained, they don't explain it at all. They don't explain it one bit. And so the relative risk among those who did have a history of psychiatric diagnosis was 0.93. In other words, if a person came to the hospital with a psychiatric diagnosis, they were 7% less likely to commit suicide in the ensuing 2 years after discharge than someone who had no psychiatric problem at all. And so this tells you clearly that psychiatric condition or diagnosis, whether it's depression, schizophrenia, or anything else, absolutely did not explain why people committed suicide in the 2 years after hospitalization. It had nothing to do with their prior psychiatric status. So potential mechanisms linking infection to suicidal behavior are numerous, possibly involving a number of different pathways to the brain, the authors wrote. Now, just let's go back to medical school. So back in medical school, there were people who would come to the hospital sane, let's say, alert, oriented times three, presumed to have good judgment, functional in their family unit, and maybe even employed. In other words, no psychiatric issues at all. And so while in the hospital, let's say, they would develop a psychiatric issue. And always in the differential diagnosis was poisoning. So in other words, if a person, we'll call it metabolic issue was the word. So the blood sugar was maybe going way too high or way too low as a result of medical intervention. If a drug had been introduced that affected the brain. So all of these things were possibilities. And so these were called systemic intoxication or systemic toxicity. Of course, other things could affect a person's reasoning and behavior too, such as a stroke, for example. But people who just mentally lose their ability to function without any other deficiencies, intoxication/poisoning is always on the list. So let's see what these investigators figure out. So though certain infectious agents infect the brain directly, others reach the brain from the periphery, which means from the blood. And yet others generate molecular mediators of inflammation that cross from the periphery into the brain and thereby increase the risk of suicide, they wrote. Okay, so what they're saying is they think the infection did this. Either the infection is directly in the brain, or it's in the blood and travels to the brain, or it's in another tissue and releases chemicals that go to the brain and cause this problem. Now, question, of course, is why would these chemicals be these issues be available or around for 2 years. Let's see what they figure out. In particular, influenza B virus and the parasite Toxoplasma gondii have been linked to suicidal behavior. The latter, that means the toxoplasma, has been shown to be associated with impulsivity and aggression in psychiatric patients and healthy adults alike. So the question, of course, is how many of these patients actually had these particular infections? Probably not very many. I can tell you, as a practicing physician, I have never seen influenza B virus that was documented or validated by a test, and I've never seen toxoplasma infection. When we come back, we'll talk more about that.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Angioprim can unclog blocked arteries and improve blood flow in all parts of your body. Angioprim is oral chelation. Easy, simple, liquid oral chelation. You take it with juice before breakfast and forget about it. Angioprim works fast, unlike old-fashioned chelation that takes hours. Just log on to angioprim.com. That's Angioprim, A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M, angioprim.com. Angioprim users say they have more energy, more strength, more endurance. Increased circulation and blood flow will make all your body parts work better. Log on to angioprim.com to get more information on how you can get started and start feeling better, having fun, and doing more again. Lots more. Talk to a trained Angioprim consultant. Call Angioprim toll-free at 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221. Or log on for complete information. Angioprim.com. That's angioprim.com. Find out how Angioprim can work for you. Get the facts about Angioprim at angioprim.com.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Hi, it's Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. And we are taking a look at research done by the medical industrial complex itself that shows that people who are hospitalized for infections have a much higher rate of suicide, 43% higher rate of suicide, in the 2 years following their hospitalization than people who were not hospitalized. And so we're looking at their research and see if we can't sort something out, because, of course, at the end of the day, they always conclude, what research always includes, which is that more research is needed. So we're going to see if we can't solve this mystery tonight without any more research. Okay, so inflammatory evidence, they say. So patients with recent suicide attempts have been shown to have elevated levels of interleukin-6 and the inflammatory metabolite quinolic acid, and a recent meta-analysis found a robust link between increased interleukin-6 and interleukin-1b levels and increased suicidality. And so these are patients with recent suicide attempts, not patients who've been discharged from a hospital. So this is basically irrelevant. Furthermore, postmortem brain samples of patients who died from suicide have shown increase in quinolic acid as well as increases in level of messenger RNA of inflammatory cytokines. And again, this increase can be caused by many different things. The authors speculate that immune system alterations that can either lead to or result from infection could play a role in suicidal behaviors. Then again, the psychological effect of simply being hospitalized with a severe infection could itself increase the risk, they speculate. However, after adjusting for the effect of long-term and physical disease using the Charleston Comorbidity Index, the association between infection and suicide was still significant, the authors write. In other words, if people are committing suicide because they're just so distraught at being hospitalized for pneumonia, then how come the frequency of suicide has no correlation to the severity of their condition on discharge? So in other words, it's unlikely that the disappointment or sadness surround being hospitalized with a severe infection is a factor at all, since the person's physical condition on discharge or level of disability has nothing to do with their proclivity to commit suicide. It doesn't explain this 43% increase. So then she says, so we can't really explain this trend. These new findings, although compelling, don't show that the hospitalization caused the increased suicide. So maybe there's not really a relationship, but just an association. So she says, our study can show an association, but cannot prove that serious infections directly contribute to suicide risk, she said. However, our findings do indicate that environmental factors, such as infections, may be relevant and play an important role in the pathophysiological mechanisms of suicide behavior. In other words, the disease is contributed to by infections. So what about low-grade infections? So I said, well, it was a low-grade infection. Now, just for those of you listening, low-grade infections are not treated by hospitalization. No, they are not treated by hospitalization. So it could be a possibility that when these people are hospitalized and treated for infections, there's a low-grade persistent infection that hangs around for a long time, and that is what causes the suicidal behavior. So commenting on the findings for Medscape News, they turn to a Dr. Lena, MD, PhD, of Grand Rapids, Michigan, and she says that with inflammation already a heightened area of focus in suicidality and depression, the findings offer highly important new insights. So now they're saying, well, we're studying suicidality and we're thinking that inflammation might be an issue. So it's known that inflammation is present in patients with depression. Now, remember, this increase in suicidality among people who had been hospitalized was not in any way associated with depression. So people who had been diagnosed with depression prior to admission were not affected.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and, of course, you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at numanarepublic.com. That's NUMANA Republic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
While the large majority of Americans have never heard of cryptocurrency, it is the medium of exchange of the future that has already begun. On the other hand, the large majority of RBN listeners are very aware of the corruption within the Fed and the trillions in counterfeit money and credit it has created. Well, would you like to do something about this? OneCoin, the fastest growing company of any kind in world history, will pay you to help do away with the Federal Reserve. Henry Ford didn't invent the automobile, but he surely developed many great improvements in the industry. In 1927, talking pictures made silent movies obsolete overnight, and email has practically done away with the need for a fax machine. With cryptocurrency, Bitcoin became the pioneer in 2009. But now OneCoin, as the first ever gold-backed cryptocurrency, has moved to the top of the industry in only 2 years, and its impact on the financial world could be devastating to the Fed. Bill Gates and Richard Branson and all the jillionaires are already acknowledging that this system of paying for goods and services is becoming what will be recognized as the new worldwide reserve currency. For more information, call Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911. Again, that's Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911.
Give such delight. We all leave before morning light.
Hi, Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. So we're talking today about people who are hospitalized for infections and subsequently develop a spike in the frequency of suicides that lasts for as long as 2 years after the hospitalization. So the now what they're suggesting, we're just winding up the study here, So environmental factors such as infections may be relevant and play an important role in suicidal behavior. And they go on to say it's known that inflammation is present in patients with depression. And we can totally dismiss this because the frequency of committing suicide had nothing to do with depression. So inflammation being present in people with depression and patients with suicidal ideation is actually not relevant here because when previously depressed patients were compared with patients with no history of depression, the patients with no history of depression actually had an increased risk of suicide over those who had a history of depression. So that's not the case. So this is the first large epidemiological study highlighting the role of infections, estimating over 10% of suicides may be attributable to severe infections. And again, they neglect the possibility that it might be related to the treatment, even though the duration of treatment correlates with the probability of suicide. So Dr. Brundlin, who co-authored an editorial, also noted that one of the most worrisome aspects of a possible link between infection and suicidality is that infections can be of low grade and long term. Again, this study did not notice there is any correlation between infections that were low grade and long term. Chronic low-grade infections are sometimes not treated and might remain latent in the body for years, she writes. Of course they are, but again, they do not appear as a factor in these suicides. And so you can see this is kind of confounding information that is not logically related to the study or to the suicides in the study. So we had people who were admitted to hospitals for suicide, and we have people who are not admitted to hospitals, for infections. We have people who are not admitted to hospitals for infections, and those who were admitted to hospitals for infections had an increased rate of suicide. So if untreated infections, untreated low-grade infections, were a factor here, then we wouldn't see any increase in suicidal behavior in the treated infections. And so if you have treated infections showing a spike in suicide, the postulation that untreated infections could cause an even higher spike in suicide is actually unfounded because we have here a population-based study. So the number of untreated infections would likely be equal to or greater than the number of treated infections. So it's possible the link between infections and suicide might become even stronger when such infections are taken into account, not only the ones requiring hospitalization. So this doctor believes a study should pave the way for novel treatment, that means new profit for drug companies, treatment studies that probe the effects of the treatment of infection in depressed or suicidal patients. Trials could attempt to eradicate chronic infections with antibiotics. That means people should get more antibiotics more often, maybe sooner, in cases of remaining inflammation without any pathogen. So in other words, if a person has inflammation and there's no infectious organism identified, then maybe they should get anti-inflammatory drugs as well. So the perspective of utilizing anti-inflammatory and antibiotic medication in psychiatric patients is revolutionary, she noted. Okay, now I just have to stand back here. So when I was in medical school, it was back at 1979 to 83, antibiotics were postulated as the absolute cure for just about everything. So we have infections, okay, gotcha. But it was said, well, geez, you know, these people with arthritis, they have these swollen, hot, painful joints, even though we can't identify any infection because they put needles in, they tap it, take out serum. What if we gave them long-term infection or antibiotics? Would that help? If we gave them antibiotics for a week, a month, a year? And so I'm sure that was tried. It actually went nowhere. And if you talk to Lyme patients who suffer from chronic arthritis, it's part of the Lyme disease, and who have taken antibiotics for months, even years, many of them will tell you that it did not help. So here we have the boogeyman of inflammation, and it's like, aha, this inflammation means there's a hidden infection. Maybe we can't find it. Let's treat it with antibiotics. But medically speaking, in terms of pathophysiology and microbiology, the body's response to inflammation is identical, whether the inflammation is an infection or whether it's a chemical inflammation. So the body's response to inflammation is standard, whether the inflammation is chemical or infectious. And so this is something that is really not shared with the public. And it is mentioned in medical school. So we still have failed to, I think, consider a very important aspect, which is that this inflammation might be of a chemical origin. So I say, importantly, patients prone to suicidal ideation and behavior need to be enrolled in clinical trials rather than being excluded, which is often the case currently. Whoa, back up. Okay, so patients who are prone to suicidal ideation and behavior, studying these patients would not cast any light on this problem. Why? Because people entering the hospital who are not prone to suicidal ideation, not prone to suicidal behavior, had actually a greater frequency of suicide in the 2 years post-discharge. So because this uniquely affects people who have no risk for suicidal ideation or behavior, then studying patients who are prone to such things would, of course, not be useful. That's number one. Number two, the reason these patients who are prone to suicidal ideation and behavior are not allowed to be enrolled in studies is because they got poor judgment. They're not competent to consent. And, of course, they would be open to extreme abuse due to, you know, deception and manipulation. And so the risk for depression and suicides in patients with severe infection should also be carefully considered by clinicians caring for these patients, Dr. Brunden urged. The study was funded with an unrestricted scholarship grant from the Lundbeck Foundation, and the authors have disclosed no relevant financial relationships. And Dr. Brunden is a principal investigator of a study on inflammation as a cause of perinatal depression and suicidality that is funded by a grant from the National Institute of Mental Health. So Dr. Brunden has a clear conflict of interest here in that he's getting money for a study that proposes inflammation as a cause of depression. So he's definitely got a bias here. Now, I took a look at this headline, infection linked to large increased risk for death by suicide. So it's only in hospitalized patients. So I said to myself, why don't we take a look at the standard of care? Why don't we take a look at what people in the hospitals who have infections are being treated for? Why don't we just do that? All right. So I mosey on over to the National Library of Medicine, of course. And lo and behold, they say that people who are outpatient and have no prior history of anything, a drug resistance, and they have pneumonia and they're admitted to the hospital, they should receive azithromycin, clarithromycin, or doxycycline. This is for community-acquired pneumonia. A person walks in off the street, they got pneumonia. Doctor says, oh my God, you've got pneumonia. When do you admit you to the hospital? So what do we know about azithromycin? Well, we know that if you give somebody azithromycin, 0.71% of them are going to have suicidal thoughts. That's a pretty high amount. Well, what do we know about doxycycline? Well, we know that doxycycline also causes suicidal thoughts. Interesting. And clarithromycin, That'd be the same thing. Well, okay. How do we treat this person if the person has received an antibiotic in the prior 3 months? Well, that person will receive azithromycin or clarithromycin, both of which have increased suicidal ideation and completion. Or, better yet, get this, if the person is really sick, maybe an emphysema, IV drug user, they've just had the flu a while ago, they don't have a spleen, maybe they got diabetes, liver disease, renal disease, what do they get? They get levofloxacin or moxifloxacin. But wait. Levofloxacin and moxifloxacin are quinolones. You probably didn't know that, but I looked it up, so I know that. So what about quinolones? Quinolone antibiotics and suicidal behavior is so severe, it has come to the attention of the World Health Organization. And the World Health Organization's Adverse Drug Reactions database is discussing the mechanism, the potential mechanisms of how these antibiotics cause suicidal behavior. So they're not even questioning, do they? They say, okay, these antibiotics cause suicide. But we want to take a look at how the suicide is caused before we jump to any conclusions about, restricting their use. So this is actually an article in PubMed, National Library of Medicine. It says, quinolone antibiotics and suicidal behavior, the World Health Organization's Adverse Drug Reactions Database and Discussion of Potential Mechanisms. So what's the result? From December 1970 to January 2015, we, the authors, identified 992,000 antibiotic-related adverse reactions. Among them, 608 were quinolone-related suicidal behaviors, including 97 cases of completed suicides. Now, there's also quite a few in the United States. And if you go online, you'll see quite a few letters, angry letters, of the survivors of people who took quinolones. There was increased reporting of suicidal behavior, adjusting for reporting odds ratios, of 2.7-fold. Anywhere from 2.5 to 3 times as often with quinolones as compared to other antibiotics. Candidate mechanisms for quinolone-induced suicidal behaviors include GABA antagonism, activation of NMDA receptors, decreased serotonin levels, oxidative stress, and altered microRNA expressions. But do you really friggin' care? Do you care? Isn't it enough to know that quinolones cause suicidal behavior? I mean, isn't that enough? And it causes a 3-fold increase in suicidal behavior. This more than explains the 50% increase in suicidal behavior among people treated for pneumonia when quinolones are listed several times in several different protocols as the first and second drugs of choice for treatment of pneumonia. And this may be why, in the study, it was noted that people with pneumonia especially had a higher risk of suicide in the 2 years following admission. In other words, 50% increase in the expected suicide rate. Very interesting. And so what did the World Health Organization decide? They found a strong safety signal suggesting an increased risk of suicidal behaviors associated with quinolone use. And further investigations are urgent to confirm and better understand these findings. Shocking. You would think the folks who did the original research, showing that hospitalized patients treated in the hospital for infection, there's two pieces of that, They had to have infection and be treated in the hospital. So the infection might be one factor, but the other factor is a hospitalization, because both factors are present. So how do you separate the two? Well, there are people who have infections who don't get hospitalized. And guess what? They don't have an increase in hospitalization. Why is this? Well, when you go to the hospital and you have a condition, the doctor writes you a prescription. And he's relying on you to go to the pharmacy and fill that prescription. the pharmacy fill rate for prescriptions written is somewhere around 75%. So there you go, 25% of the people who are diagnosed with infection and sent home don't ever take these antibiotics because they don't get it filled. Then you have the ones that get it filled, but then they stop taking the antibiotic after a day or just one dose. That's probably another 25%. So literally half the folks who have an infection treated as an outpatient do not take the antibiotics as prescribed. But what about the ones admitted to the hospital? Well, a lot of times their antibiotics are given intravenously. They don't have the option of missing a dose. Then, once they're able to take things orally, the nurse gives them the pill every single day on schedule, and they take their pills. They don't have the option, again, of stopping the drugs early. Now, of course, many of you have heard the propaganda, you've got to take your antibiotics all the way to the end, until every last pill is gone. Otherwise, those organisms can get resistant. Well, how about this one? Try this one on. If you take those antibiotics every day as prescribed all the way to the end, especially if it's a quinolone, you have an increased risk of killing yourself. Yeah, killing yourself, whether you're inpatient or outpatient. So it seems as a tremendous preponderance of the evidence that it is the standard of care which is executed in the hospitals that then causes patients to execute themselves via suicide as much as 2 years after. And why would that be? Well, let's first take a look at the other standard of care. So then we come back.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutraMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutrition best meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. Nutramedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com. NutraMedical.com for the whole family.
Hi, it's Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. So we're talking tonight about infections and increased suicide after hospital-treated infections. But I want to remind you of our sponsor, VitalityCapsules.com. We are having an awesome sale tonight. Two for the price of one. Yes, two for the price of one. It is a secret sale. Yes, but I'm going to share it with you. It's at VitalityCapsules.com/secret sale, no spaces. And this sale will be ending tomorrow, which is Monday, at 9 p.m. So, mosey on over and stock up. They have these sales once or twice a year. So, this is an excellent time to stock up. And there's even a bonus. I'm doing a bonus webinar to let people know how the emergency room gives people dangerous drugs without their consent and how to avoid the whole ordeal. Yep. Okay, so we're talking about the treatment. What treatment can you expect to get in a hospital should you have an infection? And so because infection is a vague term, I picked pneumonia. And also I picked pneumonia because 50% increased risk of suicide within 2 years after being discharged for treatment for hospital treatment for pneumonia. So people with pneumonia have an exceptionally high risk of actually killing themselves for up to 2 years after they leave the hospital. And so we're taking a look at that. You probably want to wonder, where do I get my information? Holy Jesus Christ, right? So this is from Medscape, and Medscape has a section here, drugs and diseases, and it talks about community-acquired pneumonia empiric therapy. That means this is a therapy the doctor will give for pneumonia acquired outside of the hospital when the patient comes to the hospital. And this is before doing any tests to identify the organism in question. And this is why the frequency, I believe, of suicide is so high even after only 1 day of hospital treatment. Why? Because whether the person has a viral pneumonia or bacterial pneumonia, they get antibiotics, as I said, up front, immediately, while the doctor is waiting for the test results. So, again, community-acquired pneumonia is defined as pneumonia acquired outside the hospital or long-term care facility and occurs within 48 hours of hospital admission or in a patient presenting with pneumonia who does not have any of the characteristics of healthcare-associated pneumonia. In other words, so if the patient gets pneumonia either before it comes to the hospital or within 2 days of being in the hospital, then it's considered community-acquired pneumonia. Whether that's true or not is really irrelevant. What we do need to know, though, is what antibiotics are given. So azithromycin, clarithromycin, doxycycline. These are what is required, what is recommended, and these are all associated with suicidality. Yes, increased risk of suicide. And if a person has received prior antibiotics in 3 months, again, azithromycin and or fluoroquinolone, levofloxacin or moxifloxacin. Both associated with increased risk of suicidality. And according to the Health Association, threefold increase.
I saw you there, just standing there. And I thought I